Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, as the Synod of Bishops on Africa reaches the halfway point of its work here in the Vatican, an international conference sponsored by Caritas Internationalis and the US Embassy to the Holy See looks at ways of preventing mother-to-child transmission of the HIV virus, especially in countries across the African continent. Cardinal Walter Kasper presents a new book on the fruits of ecumenical dialogue over the past 40 years, and top ecumenical experts from the Catholic Church and the World Council of Churches meet in Spain to discuss ways of promoting better cooperation across their different communities. The scandal of hundreds of thousands of children dying unnecessarily from AIDS-related diseases is the focus of an international conference going on in Rome this week. The three-day seminar brings together influential voices from the Vatican, the United Nations, major drug companies, non-governmental organisations, and religious networks working in the field of HIV/AIDS care and prevention. The meeting, which opened on Wednesday, has been jointly organised by the US Embassy to the Holy See and the global aid and development network Caritas Internationalis. Leslie Ann Knight is Secretary General of the Caritas Confederation, which first identified AIDS as a priority for development work two decades ago.
This particular event is raising awareness above all of the situation, notably in Africa, but also in other developing countries of the world, of the prevalence of HIV and related illnesses like TB in infants and children, and the total lack really of awareness of how we can very easily prevent children contracting HIV from their mothers, often in the womb but normally after birth, through medicines that are appropriate for them.
What kind of success have you had so far? Because you've been waging this campaign for quite a while now, haven't you?
I think we're starting to see the fruits of collaboration, not only across all of our Catholic organisations and other faith-based organisations in this, but our collaboration notably with UNAIDS, with the WHO TB departments, and with governments as far as we are able, either in the countries we work, but notably to, like with through our embassy here of the United States to the Holy See, but our organizations who have had contact over now quite a few years with the program of the United States government, notably in Africa. And you'll recall that was set up by the previous president and has now been continued as well by President Obama. These are resources, financial resources, that we are constantly requesting be channeled to Catholic and faith-based organizations, given the value of the work that we do. So I would say there is a long way to go, but we know we have successes. We have countries in Africa which are starting to show a reduction now in the incidence of infants being born with HIV, but also the survival rate of little ones after birth.
We've actually heard that it is going to be possible, it should be possible, even right now, to eliminate the possibility of a child being born with HIV/AIDS.
It is possible to eliminate that. If we are able to screen mothers, to test mothers while they're pregnant, if we can detect a mother in her pregnancy as being at risk of passing the virus on to her child, first and foremost, we can treat that mother before the child is born. We can treat the child then immediately after the birth. If we are able to, at say 18 months or 2 years of that child's life, then adapt the medicines, that child has an excellent chance of surviving it. What we need though is, and this is part of our campaign as Caritas now, is to encourage first and foremost pharmaceutical companies to hear this, to hear the fact that we do not have appropriate medicines for babies and for small children. We don't have the resources that it would take. And as we've heard already just in the first hour or so of this conference, it's a lot more than simply providing medicines. We need as well to be able to care for the whole person. A small baby or a mother taking very heavy doses of antiretroviral drugs needs proper nutrition. They need adequate food. They need clean water. they also need assistance in being able to come for regular checks to clinics, say. That means transport. All of this is part of a holistic program. That's the key to success.
You're talking about the vital importance of early diagnosis and testing. And yet, as you well know, so often this is a gender issue, isn't it? In so many of these countries, women just simply aren't able to come forward for this kind of testing for fear of the stigmatization that they face.
And that is our biggest problem. So to be, especially as a Catholic faith organization, compassionate and non-judgmental in raising awareness of this, we need to start with our own clergy, with our men, to say, if you do not enable or allow your women to come for testing, if you then stigmatize and discriminate against them, you are prejudicing the survival of subsequent generations and the lives of your own children.
Putting children first is also the message being emphasized by the US government representatives at this conference. Miguel Diaz is the new US ambassador to the Holy See. He told me the Obama administration is firmly committed to working with all faith communities to try and combat the scourge of AIDS, especially amongst the youngest and most vulnerable members of society.
We are turning faith dialogue into service on behalf of children. So we are literally building bridges with a number of organizations, especially with clearly Caritas Internationalis and other organizations that have come together for this great cause. And so this is as we have all heard this morning, this is an important issue for us to address. It is an important issue because it combines, number one, in terms of the United States, we are the largest donor global aid organization, and we are teaming up with the church, the world's largest delivery organization. And we are doing this on behalf of children. And I think that the message that we want to send today is that, again, cooperation among different entities is essential, that early treatment, diagnosis, is essential on behalf of the children, and that this is a worthy cause that can join us, people from different perspectives, people from even different faiths, on behalf of the children of the world.
Effective partnership between governments and faith-based organizations was at the heart of other keynote speeches at the conference, notably the executive director of the Geneva-based UNAIDS, Michel Sidibe from Mali.
Eliminating mother-to-child transmission is critical, is important, because it is the only way to have an AIDS-free generation. AIDS-free generation is the beginning of the end of HIV/AIDS. We cannot continue to have 300,000 babies born every year in Africa with HIV.
The UN leader stressed that the Church's uncompromising stand on social justice and its leadership at local level must be a key part of what he called AIDS prevention diplomacy, enabling and empowering local communities to draw up long-term care and prevention programs. But he also acknowledged that while faith-based organizations are often providing between half and three-quarters of all AIDS services, those organizations rarely receive more than 5% of the funding from donor countries. It's a serious problem which sisters Mauro Donohue and Isabel Smith have experienced firsthand in the many African countries where their medical missionaries of Mary are working.
Well, our sisters are working, medical missionaries of Mary, are working in Ethiopia particularly, in Uganda, in Malawi, in Nigeria, in Tanzania and in Kenya on HIV/AIDS work. And in a number of these, we're linking it up with the anti-trafficking issue.
We're hearing that although the church as a whole is providing a vast amount of the care and prevention work, it's only receiving a very minimal amount of the funding.
And that is something that has been acknowledged for up to 20 years back. I was attending the management board for HIV in UNAIDS, in UN, World Health Organization, many years ago from CAFOD, the English Caritas. And there we were lobbying at that stage in the 1980s for more money to be given to the NGOs, particularly the faith-based organizations under the auspices of the Catholic Church, to be given more funds. They were given something like 5% of the funds that were available, and that was after lobbying.
20 years on, though, how much has that changed?
It hasn't. Really, it has not changed. We get a little bit more, but we get free drugs, and that's due to intervention by UNAIDS, all right, the free drugs, free testing, which we lobbied pharmaceutical companies for, etc. But we do not get any funds for the extras that are involved with promoting or implementing the program PEPFAR by the US government. And they will provide the drugs free, but you have to give them detailed statistics, you have to fill multiple forms, you have to provide all the transport costs, the personnel costs, etc., for the whole extra administration. And there are no funds available for that.
The administrative work is enormous. Like, the governments require you to have at least 95% adherence once you put a client on ARVs. Now, the administrative work of ensuring 95% adherence, and if you can't give your statistical report to your government monthly, then you will not get your ARVs. So the amount of staff that involves, you have to have computers to do that, you have to be able to transport that information back to your base, and you have been out all day under a tree collecting this information, training your volunteers who come from the Christian communities, and those people are working for free. That's not even taken into consideration. The willingness, the generosity, the way those people put their faith into practice, both by using our liturgical services to announce the services that are available, and then training and following through, indicating to the trained workers where the people are needed. And the important thing is that helping HIV means from pre-birth to end of life. The range of services needed is enormous.
So, Sister Isabel, you're talking about almost a hindrance, a difficulty in the partnership, working with, on the one hand, the government funding, the money which is coming through PEPFAR and other organisations, and the money must come from them because they're the only ones with this kind of funding available. The church simply doesn't have that.
Yes.
And yet, at the same time, you're saying it's an obstacle, it's a hindrance to the valuable, the invaluable work that you and other missionaries like you are doing in the field. What is the solution?
Well, don't for one minute think that we're not grateful or appreciative of the work of PEPFAR and the governments. You must keep statistics, you must do your research, you must have statistics in order to do your research, and that is essential. It is the question of funding for the collection of that information and the processing of it. That's the only complaint, is that we get the funding for the drugs, but we don't get the funding for the transport and the administrative costs, and most of all, we don't get the funding for nutrition. When the person goes on their antiretroviral therapy, they're going to feel better, they're going to want to eat more, and until they're well enough to earn what will bring in that food, they need social support.
The question of nutrition, the question of clean water, Sister Maura, this is a really vital issue, isn't it?
Yes.
Because often the drugs companies or the government programs think that if the money is going on to antiretrovirals, then the problem is solved.
Exactly, and in no way is it, because the issues are so immense. As you say, a lack of clean water, a lack of paediatric drugs, which was mentioned this morning. Like, I've sat beside some of our doctors in clinics and nurses in clinics giving out medicines which were prepared for adults and instructing patients who come from rural areas, many of them illiterate, telling them half a tablet in the morning and a quarter of a tablet in the evening for this child, and they've nothing to cut the tablet with. And that leads to overdosage and underdosage and so many complications.
But a good thing here is that the pharmaceutical companies are present and they're getting a strong message that they must have child-sized dosage.
Yes.
And that's going to make a huge difference to missionaries in the field.
One of the key aims of this Rome conference is to bring together the many different religious and secular organisations focused on the specific goal of eliminating mother-to-child transmission of the HIV virus. Their success will largely depend upon the degree to which they're able to better coordinate and pressure donors and drugs manufacturers to support their work with individuals and families in the remotest and poorest parts of Africa. Father David Glende is Secretary General of the Union of Superiors General, which together with its female counterpart represents some 800,000 religious men and women working in countries around the world.
There's a lot of work to be done in that area, and I think people are becoming more and more aware of it. Actually, the challenge is maybe further back than that. The challenge is to know what is happening and to know what each other are doing and to see how we can do some of these things better together. So one of the first things that our HIV/AIDS working group did was an initial exercise in mapping, finding out what is going on. But there's a feeling that that has to be developed, and in collaboration with other entities, there may be a new effort at mapping. Also because we sense that even though we don't seek visibility, on the contrary, we tend not to care too much about it, sometimes visibility can be an advantage for the work we are doing. For example, if funding agencies and governments don't know that we are there, how are they going to give us resources? Somebody said today, resources won't fall from heaven. You have to make your case, and that's, it's not because we want to get resources, it's because we want to serve, and sometimes resources are necessary to do so.
It is true, isn't it, though, that the funding that goes to church organisations or faith-based organisations is very small compared to the percentage of work that they're doing.
Yes, well, that point's been made, interestingly, not so much by us today as by others. For example, the UN AID Executive Director, Michelle Sidibe, was saying, you know, that there is this disproportion, and that this doesn't make sense in terms of meeting the problem. And of course, we would say yes, and our women and men are involved in all aspects. You know, we are present in the pastoral care, where a lot can be done in terms of prevention, in terms of proposals of behavior change. We are present in education. We are present in the social work. So it really is a very many-sided and potentially powerful presence that needs to be strengthened. Yeah.
If you had one appeal that you could make to those listening to the program, to those who are interested in this kind of HIV/AIDS care and prevention work, what would it be?
Well, it would be to take whatever opportunities they have to influence those who have power, those who have resources, to focus on this particular need now, so that there should be no way that a child contracts AIDS because the mother has AIDS. That's the focus of this campaign. And maybe people need to find out about this, and they can do this by, the internet is a great place. Caritas Internationalis, who is a big power behind this campaign, has a very good website. So I would say information, conscientization, becoming aware, and then using one's influence to push people to solve this problem so that innocent children need not be afflicted in this way.
My thanks there to Comboni Father David Glenday, to Sisters Maura O'Donoghue and Isabel Smith of the Medical Missionaries of Mary, to US Ambassador to the Holy See Miguel Diaz, and to Leslie Ann Knight, Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis. And for further details about that conference, you can look up the Caritas website, www.caritas.org. Looking back at the past 40 years of progress between Christians of once bitterly divided churches and looking forward to ways of strengthening cooperation and evangelization, especially amongst young people today, those themes are at the heart of a meeting of the Joint Working Group of the Catholic Church and the World Council of Churches, which opened on Monday. The week-long meeting, taking place in Córdoba, Spain, is due to conclude with a Mass in the city's cathedral on Sunday. Amongst those taking part on the Catholic side is the Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, Bishop Brian Farrell. He told me more about the themes that are under discussion at this plenary meeting.
We have four themes on our agenda, which we hope to study in depth and begin to produce some clearer ideas on. The first theme is the question of reception. What, by that we mean, how do we bring into the real life of the churches the progress that has been made in ecumenical dialogue down the years? This is important because today people often say that ecumenism is a question of experts and theological discussions and has little real effect on many people in different parts of the world, whereas in other places it's quite part of the ordinary life of parish communities and associations and so forth. The second theme is on the spiritual roots of ecumenism. In other words, what is it that the coming together of divided Christians in prayer, in conversion, purifying the historical memories that have led to division and have kept these divisions going down the centuries, what is it that will produce effects from the grace of reconciliation, justice, and peace that comes to us from the gospel? The third theme is migration, because today, all over the world, and most especially here in Europe, we have a whole new situation of the presence of different churches because of the huge migration of people from one part to another. In the West here, we have now a new presence, a multiplied presence of the Eastern churches. We have in many places for the first time a certain plurality of Christian traditions, and all of this has great effects on the life of the local churches. So that's one point that we have to deal with. And then the fourth point would be this huge challenge for all churches, which is how to transmit the faith to the younger generations and how should their presence in the church be fostered and held. So as you can see, we have a full agenda for this week of the plenary of the joint working group between the Catholic Church and the World Council of Churches.
You're talking about transmitting the faith to young people. The World Council of Churches, of course, has a new young or relatively young general secretary elect. I'm wondering if that is going to be sort of affecting the work and the atmosphere there.
Well, it's one of the things that we take account of. It doesn't have any immediate effect on the work, but we look forward to the time when he will take over as General Secretary at the beginning of next year, and we will be working closely with him. He has already expressed the desire to deepen and to continue, first of all, and to deepen the relationship with the Catholic Church. So we're looking forward to that.
You're talking also about ways in which ecumenical progress can be taken, if you like, away from the theologians and out into the streets amongst people whose lives it actually affects. Are you talking about any really practical ways, new ways and creative ways in which this can be done?
Well, this is the whole point of the discussion here, to see how within the differences, within the different structures, within the different teaching, authoritative structures of the churches, the good results of the ecumenical movement can be made much more effective, because it would be most harmful if all of the things that have been agreed upon in 40 years of dialogue are left on library shelves. Ecumenism is for the life of the churches. It's not a question of solving theological puzzles or answering difficult questions. It is about the unity of the church in Christ, and that means living our unity in Christ. So it's essential for the life of the churches. And nobody can say, this is not my concern, this is not my business, because as long as we're divided, we're a scandal and we are depriving the church, let's say, of the energies that it might have to fulfill its mission in the world.
You mentioned also the question of migration, and in many countries, the church quite often finds itself, if you like, rather speaking out as a voice against the prevailing political attitudes regarding migration.
Well, of course, this is often the case in Europe, especially. But yes, we feel that we have a different message to convey. Every human person has a dignity that must be respected in every circumstance. And on this basis, then, the laws and the reglementation of immigration should, of course, be based. And we realize that within the present circumstances of the world, and with all the deficiencies of our cultural heritages, we often find that there is no space for these new arrivals. And this is something that would not agree with the gospel, and therefore we have to find ways to exhort society to come to a more humane and a more Christian way of looking at these things.
My thanks there to Bishop Brian Farrell, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. And finally, the head of the Council for Christian Unity, Cardinal Walter Kasper, on Thursday presented a new book looking at the fruits of ecumenical dialogue over the past 40 years. Entitled Harvesting the Fruits, the book looks at progress made between Catholic, Anglican, Lutheran, Methodist and Reformed theologians. Yet this formal aspect is just one of the many paths being pursued, as the Cardinal explained to journalists gathered in the Vatican press office.
Ecumenism is a many-layered reality. There is the dialogue, the theological dialogue, and this book reflects the theological dialogue. But the theological dialogue is not possible without dialogue in prayer, dialogue with God. And I, according to my personal experience, every dialogue does fail if there is not a common prayer. But this is not reflected in this book, so this book limits itself to the theological dimension, but we do it in our dialogues very often. And the same is true for liturgy. When I take part in a Lutheran mass, especially in the States, but also in an Anglican liturgy, I have to be very, very careful to listen what are the differences. There are some words which are different, but it's very similar because they had also a liturgical reform after our reform, and the reforms are very, very close to each other. But nevertheless, there are differences in the understanding, still different understanding of the Eucharist, especially about the sacrificial character of the Eucharist. And so, well, this is expressed here in a doctrinal way, but well, there are also other dimensions of ecumenism, that's clear, but you cannot do all in one book, and we had to do a lot with this book, and so the other belongs more to the living reality of ecumenism, which is there, and we are very grateful that it is there.
Thanks to Cardinal Walter Kasper, President of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.